FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it's 10-10-18, also a significant numerological number. Hey, write me in with your numerological thoughts and be a part of the show. The email address, as always, is kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, we got the midterms coming up. Things definitely are changing the political landscape rapidly. And, well, we're really blessed to have on once again, Sally C. Pipes. Sally, your latest book, The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare, really kind of spells out the issues when government pays for everything and you have no competition, government systems. You talk about what's happening in Canada, the UK, and other places. Hey, we're really thrilled to have you back on.
Well, Kerry, thank you so much. And it's a delight to be on because this is a huge issue for the midterm elections. And also it's going to be a major issue, I believe, in the 2020 presidential election.
Hey, absolutely. So, you know, we know what's wrong here. I had a guest on not too long ago who was extolling the virtues of Singapore's system. Is that a system that you've looked into at all?
Well, I have, not for a few years. But, you know, when you see pieces about Singapore, about Taiwan, some of Switzerland. These countries are completely composed of demographics that are totally different than the United States. You can't take, you know, a country like Singapore, a small homogenous population with a lot of control by government. It's completely different. We need, America's a country of 330 million people with many different ethnicities, people, different income levels among people. 170 million Americans have employer-based coverage, 55 million on Medicare. I mean, we need a system that promotes competition so that people can get the type of healthcare plan that fits the needs of themselves and their families, not, you know, imposing some government program. And Singapore, the system is probably good for people in Singapore, but we've seen in many countries, including Taiwan, that a lot of doctors, you know, are leaving Taiwan. They're having to see too many patients. They're moving to China. They can make more money as specialists going to China. So we have to be very careful. We need a healthcare system that empowers doctors and patients, not the federal government, and a system for America, which really people come from all over the world because we do have the most innovative system in the world.
Absolutely. So one of the things is because employer paid, and when you've got the government paying for half the population's health care, there's no skin in the game here. There's no incentive for a patient to shop to save money. And then because it's free, basically, gee, I stubbed my toe, you know, it's probably okay, but I think I'll go to the hospital and get an x-ray or go to the doctor. So we have demand that gets pumped up artificially because of the government's intervention in the system and because of the incentives involved.
Well, exactly. Milton Friedman, my former mentor and the Nobel laureate in economics, he was always very critical of employer-based coverage. And that came in during World War II when wage and price controls were in. It was an opportunity for employers to offer new employees something that they couldn't under the wage and price control program. And so, you know, employees get their health care tax-free. Those who go out into the individual market, if you quit your job, lose your job, or don't have a job, then you have to buy your health care with after-tax dollars. But as Milton pointed out, employer-based coverage is what we call a first-dollar coverage because people have no idea when you have employer-based coverage what the true cost is. So as you say, you stub your toe, you go to the doctor. And in countries like Canada, where they have – Canada is the only developed country in the world that has a true single-payer system, and it's a system that Bernie Sanders – Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they want to copy and even add some further things to it, like free dental care, free vision care, free drugs.
Free.
You know, in countries like that, people, you know, if you're alone, if you're, you know, single and you're elderly, you just book to go to the doctor because it's an appointment. It takes time away from doctors being able to treat patients who have true conditions.
Yeah, so the concept of the medical savings account, and I think they tried this, I'm trying to remember which state, but they've done it there, where even for people on Medicaid, they just say, hey, we're going to give you X amount of money. You'll pay the first dollar out of it. Anything that's left over, you keep. And they found that the demand for medical services went down by about a third, and they saved about 15% off the cost. I mean, it seems so simple and elemental, and yet we can't get our arms around it.
Well, you know, the health savings account legislation that President George W. Bush passed, and it came into being, I think, in 2006. We now have 20 million Americans who have set up health savings accounts where you put that money away tax-free every month. It has to be combined with a catastrophic health care plan, and you can carry that money forward tax-free. Unfortunately, seniors can't, you know, continue to contribute to their health savings account. But, you know, originally these programs were called medical savings accounts. Steve Forbes was one of the first employers at Forbes magazine to bring in a medical savings account. And I believe it was in Florida when Jeb Bush was governor that he tried HSAs, he called them health opportunity accounts. And they were very successful. And we've seen a lot of employers now offering HSAs as one of the options for their employer-based coverage. And you're right. I mean, the usage of the healthcare system with people who have a vested interest in it, they are using less healthcare. They're more careful. They shop for different, if you're getting an MRI, they shop around to find out what the best price is. So HSAs, you know, are a terrific way to help reduce costs. And there are some bills out there that would expand them, allow people to put more money away per month in their HSA, allow people to use their HSA plan to pay the premium for their coverage, because right. In many cases, the premiums are expensive for people in the individual market. So they are a terrific, another terrific option for the American people. And it brings about more competition, which is what we're all about, rather than, you know, former President Obama came out on September 7th. Remember when he introduced Obamacare, he said, well, I'm not for single payer because American people love their employer-sponsored insurance. Of course, when he was a senator in Illinois, he was for single payer. But he came out on September 7th saying, Democrats are running on some good new ideas this year, like single payer. So talk about bait and switch. I mean, you know, this is definitely, you know, something. But President Trump today came out in his in an op-ed in the USA Today, really slamming single payer Medicare for all, saying, you know, the United States would become like Venezuela. You know, he took Seema Verma's comment, Medicare for all will become Medicare for none. So he, several years ago, when he was not, you know, the president, not even running for office, thought, you know, the Canadian system or the Scottish system might be good to try. But fortunately, seeing all the data now, as president, he has come out against single payer, and yet former President Obama has come out in favor of it.
And, you know, the whole Obamacare thing made the medical savings accounts and high deductible catastrophic coverage really made it much more difficult to get that. And, you know, all I've been looking for is a nice policy with $10,000 deductible, maybe even $15,000. And the ability to put it into a medical savings account. Paying for the premiums would be great. They used to have this in New York State. My friend, who was a physician, at the time physicians really did give professional courtesy, he had such a policy, and this was probably 15, 20 years ago. He's paying about $250 a month for a family of five, and then New York banned high deductible policies, so-called catastrophic coverage. And that was the end of that.
Exactly. I mean, opening up the market is a solution. As I say, HSAs may not be for everybody. In the same way that, you know, the rule was passed, the two rules that President Trump had brought in under executive orders, one was the short-term limited duration plans, where under Obamacare, just prior to the end of his presidency, he said you can only get a short-term plan for 3 months from what was originally 12 months. Now, today, you know, Tammy Baldwin is trying to bring a bill into the Senate to say that these short-term limited duration plans that are available now for 12 months and renewable up to 3 years, you know, are sabotaging our health care. They're junk insurance. These are plans, as Alex Azar, Secretary of HHS, said, they're not for everybody, but particularly for a certain segment of the population. It gives them the opportunity to buy affordable coverage not subject to the 10 essential health benefits under Obamacare. And then also the association health plans where sole proprietors and small groups can get together and become a larger pool and buy coverage that is more affordable and covers more. So, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, so many of the Democrats are so up in arms about Mr. Trump and the Republicans that they're going crazy over, we've got to win the election so that we can, you know, beef up Obamacare. We don't want people to have options for short-term limited duration plans, association health plans, all the things that are, you know, opening up the market and that people actually like.
Yeah. And then we have the aspect, the consideration of pre-existing ailments, pre-existing conditions. So this is something that maybe insurance really isn't the proper means of paying for it, because insurance contemplates a foreseeable risk, but not something that's already occurred. Right? It's something in the future that might occur or might not occur or will occur over a certain group of people. Right? So how do we pay for the chronically ill who really kind of shouldn't be in the insurance pool at all, perhaps?
I mean, this is a huge issue that the Dems are saying this is going to be our victory lap in the midterm elections.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Egypt is on the verge, once again, becoming a world-renowned gold producer. The Golden Age is being rediscovered. For millennia, ancient Egyptian kingdoms prospered from unparalleled riches. Pharaohs built their empires and flaunted their abundant wealth that was made possible by the country's resource-rich gold deposits. Despite this rich history, modern Egypt remains one of the most underdeveloped gold mining countries in the world. Aton Resources is at the center of the modern Egyptian mining world, diligently working both as the only public exploration company in Egypt today and as the advocate for mining reform with the Egyptian government. However, those that arrive early, like Aton, will reap the best rewards. Aton's discovery of the legendary lost mountain of gold at Rudruin and its current aggressive drilling program there could potentially reap those rewards. Aton Resources is focused on its 100% owned Abu Marwat concession in the Arabian Nubian Shield, located 200 kilometers north of Sentimen Sakkari's world-class gold mine. Aton possesses first-mover advantage in the underfollowed jurisdiction of Egypt, which is currently undergoing mining reform. To stay on top of Aton's latest drill results and news, go to AtonResources.com. Aton trades on the TSX-V under the ticker AAN and on the OTC under the ticker ANLBF.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
But when you analyze how many people have, you know, chronic or pre-existing conditions, most of those people are in the employer-based market anyway. Now, they may not change jobs because, you know, or leave their job because they have coverage. But the number of people that are in the individual market who have pre-existing or chronic conditions is about 6 million people. Now, we saw under Obamacare that the pickup, you know, we only had about 11 million people on the exchanges. And the young invincibles, they didn't buy coverage because the premiums they thought were too expensive, because those premiums were geared to help cover the people who were older and sicker. So they avoided getting coverage and paid that individual mandate of $695 or 2.5% of income, whichever is greater, which expires on January 1st next year. So those people, the young people, didn't buy the coverage to subsidize. With the 6 million people who have these pre-existing conditions, what Tom Price, who was former House member, a medical doctor, and who was for a short time Secretary of HHS, Paul Ryan in his white paper, and myself, we all made the point that what the federal government should do is provide $2 billion in, which would be adequate funding to fund each of the states, so that all the states could set up high-risk pools so that their people with pre-existing or chronic conditions could get coverage, and that the healthier, younger people would not have to subsidize the coverage for these people. That is the way to go. And instead, you know, the Democrats, the very liberal Democrats, and many Democrats are saying, well, you know, this is going to just be a disaster because of pre-existing conditions. The number of people in the individual market is very small, and we can solve this problem by setting up high-risk pools. It would be so much cheaper, and it would be more efficient. And these people in the states with these conditions would know that they have access to good care and good coverage.
Yeah, that is a great point. I don't know if you've explored the concept of medical care cost sharing that's exempted for certain religious organizations. I happen to be a member of one such organization. What have you come across with that?
Yeah, the sharing ministry concept.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Healthcare cost sharing ministry.
You know, everybody, when if somebody gets sick, then the people who contribute, then they pay for your coverage. So I think it has been a really, you know, it's another example of competition in the marketplace, not for everybody, but the sharing ministries has been very effective and cost efficient for that segment of society. And I think they're another great idea. And I've been a strong proponent for several years of the sharing ministries.
Hey, and I've been a member for about almost 5 years now. They paid my bills. Thank goodness. I haven't had much to pay. They ask you to take a pledge to lead a healthy lifestyle, which I was doing anyway. It's been good for me so far, but I'm a little bit nervous because there's no regulatory oversight of them because it's a religious organization. And
right.
I feel uncertain about it. Not that government regulation of healthcare insurers is the panacea by any stretch. We've had many of them go under, including all the healthcare health insurance cooperatives that were chartered under Obamacare. But we need some regulatory oversight of these entities.
Well, I mean, I think essentially, I mean, the good thing about the sharing ministries is they're not subject to the essential health benefits. People don't have to, you know, become a member of a sharing ministry. But, you know, as I say, many types of different types of coverage are good, is good. And I think, you know, I like to see the government, you know, get out of these things. I mean, there are certain things, you know, nobody in this country can be denied care because under the federal law, anyone can turn up. Even illegals can turn up at an emergency room or a community hospital, and they have to be covered. So for people to say, oh, you know, 40 million Americans could die in the streets, it just isn't true. We have a basic a plan so everybody can be covered. We also have, as you know, under Medicaid, the program for people earning below 138% of the federal poverty level, these people can sign up, you know, for Medicaid. It's unfortunate with the expansion under Obamacare that a lot of people that are Medicaid eligible are finding it hard to get a doctor because of the very low reimbursement rates under Medicaid. So emergency room use is actually up because of the Medicaid expansion. And I hope that, you know, a number of states are going to find that the feds covered, you know, this expansion for a few years, but that amount is going down and they're going to find they're in these states that did this are in a difficult financial situation. But we need, as I say, all of these different types of plans and let people decide if you think medical, a sharing ministry plan is best for you, that's fine. I think a health savings account is best for me and my family. I mean, that's good. Somebody else might want a preferred provider plan. Somebody else, you know, has their employer plan, they choose whichever one they want, an HMO, a PPO or an HSA. But this is what makes America great, giving people opportunity. And right now we're seeing the Democrats trying to, you know, fit everybody into a one size fits all. Senator Bernie Sanders started this when he was running against Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination for president in 2016. He came out with his plan, never talks about what it would cost, how it would be paid for. But even the Urban Institute said $32 trillion over 10 years. His plan, which is a Senate bill right now, 1804, the Mercatus Center costed it $32.6 trillion over 10 years. And this will all result in waiting lists, ration care, higher taxes for everybody, and a reduction in the number of doctors because, as the American Association of Medical Colleges just pointed out, by 2030, we'll have a shortage of 121,000 doctors. And this is because doctors are more and more seeing the way they practice medicine being controlled by government. And if we get single payer, that number will be even higher, just like it is in Canada, where there's a tremendous shortage of doctors. The average Canadian family waits 21.2 weeks, over 5 months, from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist. And it's not free. Bernie Sanders keeps saying, you know, the Canadian system is free. The average family pays $13,000 a year in hidden taxes for a healthcare system that puts them on a waiting list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So you take a number and wait. So we need to replace Medicaid in its current form. We need to really figure out what we're going to do with Medicare, because they're both destined for failure, ever escalating costs, because we have the exact same situation of somebody else picking up the tab and there being no incentives to save money. Long term, we got to replace them with something that is more patient-centered and puts incentives in place so that you will use the care only when you need it, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, Paul Ryan had talked about this. I've talked about it. You know, Medicare came into being in 1965, so it's 53 years old. You know, in the first year, President Lyndon Johnson, under his Great Society, predicted it would cost $3 billion a year in the first year, $12 billion by 1990. In fact, it cost $110 billion. Government is not good at estimating the cost of government programs. But the issue is that by 2030, Medicare Part A will be bankrupt. It'll be costing about $1 trillion. Right now, it's about $580 billion. And we have, you know, the baby boom, my generation, is moving into that age cohort. And we're going to see it's just not affordable. We have to raise the age, because when it came into being in 65, the average person only lived to 65. Now in America, they live to 79.5. So we should be raising the age of eligibility, because a lot of these people continue to work. We should means test it. Why should people like Warren Buffett, you know, be eligible for Medicare? He can well afford it. Medicare, the program, should be available for those people, families, and people who really need it and can't afford other options. So we need to means test it, raise the eligibility age, and I think bring in options like health savings accounts. And the same with Medicaid. A lot of the people in the states that did the expansion of Medicaid, a lot of the people went on Medicaid. And they didn't have to, you know, find a job. And that's why work requirements are such a great part in the states that are pushing for them. Because a lot of people said, well, I can get coverage on Medicaid. I don't need to work. And that puts tremendous pressure on those people who are working and paying taxes for people that could work that decide not to.
And finally, one thing that's an intractable problem, it seems, under any system is long-term care, nursing homes. How do we deal with that effectively?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, long-term care, I mean, I personally have long-term care. It's not inexpensive. But if they added, you know, long-term care to a single-payer healthcare system, which Bernie has talked about this too, it's going to be very, very expensive. It's going to explode the cost of health even more than the $3.2 trillion a year that Bernie's plan would cost. And nobody would be getting good care. People need to take responsibility for their lives. Go out when you're younger and buy long-term care so that when you get to an age where you might have a condition, you might need the care, you have private coverage for it, and not make all the younger people who are starting out in their careers pay higher taxes to provide coverage for those of us who might have a serious condition.
Yeah, and then it leads to all sorts of corruption in the nursing home industry. You know, you're always reading about scandals unfolding there.
And there are scandals in the Medicaid program and in the Medicare program. There's a lot of fraud that has been going on. Look at Senator Menendez and his ophthalmologist friend in Florida. I mean, you know, there's a lot of fraud in these government programs.
Yeah, and the whole, what used to get me was the scooter store. Oh, it won't cost you anything. You know, the government's going to pay for it all. Order two, you know? And finally they shut them down, but it was years that went on for, Sally. Years.
Yes.
So the book is The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare by Sally C. Pipes. You really want to take a look at it. There are solutions, but we need to think out of the box. One thing you have to say about this president, Sally, is that he does think out of the box and will embrace solutions that others have not contemplated or are fearful of even attempting. Just look at what's happened in foreign policy and trade. No one else. So maybe it's time for the president to turn his not inconsiderable creativity towards solving problems towards our medical system, and let's finally come up with something that works. We don't even have time to talk about creeping credentialization. You just mentioned one thing to me, though, and it's taking place in, I believe, in the UK, where they're having group medical appointments with doctors, where 15 people will go in a room and they go round robin. I don't know how you even attempt to treat 15 people at once.
But with the 4.3 million people on waiting lists in the UK under the National Health Service, you know, they're trying to figure out ways to reduce the attempts. But I think, you know, for the American people to be told, well, you know, you'll have to join a group of 15 people to meet your primary care doctor, it's just ridiculous. But when you have doctor shortages, long waiting lists under government program, the same thing would happen in this country if we go this route. Bernie Sanders said in CNN, Medicare for All's time has come. I say the American people need to be educated on what that means for them in terms of waiting lists, ration care, tax increases, and the shortage of doctors.
All that stuff. And hey, we didn't even touch the surface on tort reform, which causes all this defensive medicine. Supposedly a third of all testing and procedures are defensive medicine, so that the doctor can say, well, here's what I did. I did everything in the book. And you know what? You can't sue me. I'm not liable. So a lot of things need to be done. I think that dependent upon the results of the midterms, we're going to start to see things done. I think the midterms are going to be a big shock to all of these so-called pundits, almost as big as the 2016 election. It's going to turn out much different than they ever expected, let's hope. Anyway, check out Sally's book, The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare. You can go over, where's the best place to buy it these days, Sally?
Amazon is best, and it's published by Encounter Books.
Excellent. So we'll have a link, as always, in the show notes to this interview. Sally, appreciate you coming on, and keep up the fight.
Good. Thanks, Kerry. We'll talk again soon after the election, probably. Take care.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.